audio version of Michael Laidman's blog. January 30th, 2020. My thoughts on Twitter. January 30th, 2020. If every person in the 10 thinks about the 10, there is a possibility to let the toy, your ego desire, out of your hands, and in exchange, to enter the upper world, another reality. The Creator has prepared this wonderful possibility for us. We must only heed the Kabbalist's advice. We do not agree to let go of our petty egoism, even though it only causes us troubles. All the problems are nothing other than the Creator's help for us to come out of egoism. But no matter how hard we try to take the toy out of the child's hand, he won't give it up willingly. The Creator's aim is to delight the creatures. We must hence attain the unlimited ability to receive unlimited fulfillment, meaning not limit ourselves. We must attain a desire that is beyond creation, beyond boundaries. This is possible only with the intention of bestowal. If a person receives a desire from the Creator, the intention to bestow, he acquires an unlimited desire, a spiritual vessel, and to this degree he enjoys bestowal instead of reception. And he is no longer isolated, in the authority of his personal impressions, but in the sensation of perfect infinite fulfillment. From Twitter, January 30th, 2020. The Jewish choice, unity or anti-Semitism. Awaken mercy in the world. If we unite and reveal Hasidim, mercy, between us, then nothing bad will happen. Indeed, when the upper light is revealed without the cover of Hasidim, it is very painful, like a sharp knife or the fire of hell. However, if we precede this revelation with the cover of Hasidim, the light reveals itself as a waterfall of goodness. Through unity, we awaken mercy in the world, Hasidim, and then the light that comes to push forward the people of Israel and all of humanity toward correction enters the Hasidim, prepared by us from below. Hasidim comes from below, and from above comes the light of Chokmah. It depends only on us, on our connection. By uniting, we attract the light that reforms, called Hasidim. This Hasidim spreads among us, and we find ourselves in a cloud of mercy. Then, the upper light of Chokmah, which comes in order to advance us, does not enter us like a knife, but it is covered in Hasidim, and reveals the Creator to us according to the equivalence of form between our bestowal, Hasidim, and the light of Chokmah from his side. From the second part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, January 30th, 2020, the Jewish choice, unity or anti-Semitism. Maybe we have yet to see Kobe Bryant's greatest achievement. From my Facebook page, Michael Laidman. January 30th, 2020. As obituaries, tears and heavy mourning continue filling the world in the aftermath of Kobe Bryant's unexpected death. The grief is accompanied by a very deep question. How does such a person, a cultural icon who had everything considered valuable in life, respect, fame, health, wealth, looks, NBA titles, an Oscar award, a multi-million dollar business empire, a bright future as a brand builder, an investor, a coach to other athletes and mentor to company founders, as well as a loving and caring family and many friends, one morning come to such a sudden end? Most in our society follow the news and social media that reports on deaths, accidents, tragedies, people who die under unfortunate circumstances, in addition to reporting on success, sports, entertainment, arts, stars and superstars, people to admire, who make strides to rise to the top of everything that we value in life. When one of our superstars suddenly enters the dark side of the news, we become frozen in shock. How could it be? Kobe Bryant's tragic death is a painful reminder to us mere mortals that life is short and temporary. It shows us how, even if we reach the highest levels of success in life, it can all be lost in a split second. The day Kobe Bryant's private helicopter crashed, there were other accidents in the world and deaths of people under sad circumstances. Various people, young and old, left behind grieving families. However, we neither know their names, nor recognize their faces. This shows us an aspect of our nature that esteems people according to their projection of our life values. Our natural desires for money, respect and control people able to work with determination, discipline, and motivation, who grab our attention by out-competing their way to success, honor, wealth, fame and dominance. We then create systems that advertise these people to us, making them larger than life, embodiments of everything we could possibly want. Then, when such a person's life comes to a sudden end, we become jolted. How could such a superstar die? He was immortal to us. He shouldn't be in the part of the news that focuses on grievous deaths and accidents. That part of the news is for the nameless and countless unfortunates, not for superstars. The Kobe Bryants of the world belong in the sports, entertainment, and business sections as positive symbols of accomplishment and success. The winners with fairy tale lives who inspire us with hope. Kobe Bryant's death is a sign of just how ultimately equal we all are. In the face of death, there is no difference between a great king and an ordinary working man. The naked truth is that the body of the king and the worker ends up buried in the same ground and turns to ash and dust just the same. Above all of Kobe Bryant's achievements, perhaps the greatest legacies that his remarkable life can offer us is a reminder of our equality before the certain fate of death, and a powerful call to action to treat one another accordingly, with tenderness and love, while we are here. In addition to sharing positive memories about Kobe and comforting his wife and family, we can honor his legacy by using his untimely death as a reminder to increase love and a spirit of unity among humanity. Among his numerous successes, that could well become the greatest achievement that Kobe Bryant can still bring to the world, something which rests in our hands to implement from now onward, and which would truly be larger than the life we have known until today. If such a spirit of love and unity were to spread throughout society, then maybe we would all be able to reach death pleasantly and naturally, and prevent many future violent and abrupt deaths from happening. Maybe we could then feel that we are all parts of a greater whole, a body of humanity in balance with an even greater nature. And then, just as nature never leaves us, we would never leave it. Nature's life-giving secrets that we can learn from Chernobyl Cabinet. Cabinet published my new article, Nature's Life-Giving Secrets That We Can Learn From Chernobyl. On April 26, 1986, one of the world's worst-case scenarios materialized. The Chernobyl nuclear reactor exploded as a result of a failed experiment, releasing 10 times more radiation than the amount from Hiroshima. A vast area became deadly for 350,000 residents. Despite the Soviet regime's attempts to hide history's most severe nuclear accident, within days, the place became a ghost town. Hundreds of thousands of people were evacuated from their homes, and scientists estimated that the affected Chernobyl area would be uninhabitable for the next 20,000 years. Against human logic, a decade later, vegetation began sprouting from the ruins. Chernobyl became a kind of evolutionary laboratory for the world, where a flourishing nature reserve emerged from nuclear ruin. The fields blossomed, trees of the forests restored themselves, and a variety of animals began to appear in the area: reptiles, poultry and various mammal species, some of which had not lived in the area for many years before the disaster. If we repair human relations, building bridges of positive connections above our innate rejection, divisiveness and even hatred of each other, we can then experience our reality as perfect. Through the lens of nature's laws, the regrowth at Chernobyl is akin to many new planetary states that surfaced from their opposites. The Earth has developed through states, when its surface was molten, when it was mostly coated in ice, and also when it was completely covered in water. However, out of every era, our planet emerged stronger and healthier than its preceding version. What happens when humans don't interfere with nature? The universe has endless healing and balancing forces. When humans do not interfere in the inanimate, vegetative and animate levels of nature, there is total harmony. We operate in a network of forces, of which we have little understanding, so even our seemingly benign thoughts and actions might result in unintentional harm. It follows that when the selfish and destructive human spirit abandons an area, it becomes filled with life. Chernobyl provides such an example. When the radiation began fading away and there was no human disturbance, new species of plants and animals emerged that we thought were extinct. Where did these new species come from? How new species of plants and animals emerged in Chernobyl after the disaster? Nature is comprised of many forces, visible and latent, and myriad combinations between these forces bring about an infinite variety of forms. When humans exit the picture, leaving these forces alone, they act and give birth to every manifestation that needs to exist according to the current developmental stage. It is a law of nature. Every intersection in the network must be fulfilled and generate something new, whether on the inanimate, vegetative or animate levels. At every level, nature operates according to different and contrasting attributes of connection, in order to create harmony and balance, enabling ever more advanced life forms to evolve. In other words, nature always evolves to higher states of unification. Nature's inanimate, vegetative and animate levels obey its laws and operate harmoniously. Every object and organism on these levels extracts exactly what its sustenance requires and passes any surplus back to the larger system in which it exists. This is how a well-oiled integral system is created. Only the human being can, for a limited time, resist such laws. Human nature has a tendency to act oppositely. We contribute what we must, and take as much as we can without considering the system's other parts. We do so without understanding that we rob ourselves by doing so, because in reality we are interdependent parts of the natural system like cogwheels in a machine. What humans should take away from the Chernobyl Rixroth? The Chernobyl example demonstrates how human nature is opposite to nature itself. The human ego, that is, the desire to enjoy at the expense of others, which gives rise to exploitation, manipulation, and abuse in the midst of our relations, generates toxins that radiate throughout nature. It is thus imperative for us to learn how nature works, and by so doing, we will know how to fix the problems we cause. If we raise awareness of our function as humans within nature, understanding how its inanimate, vegetative and animate levels depend on our relations, then we can work together to become harmoniously integrated with and beneficial to nature. If we repair human relations, building bridges of positive connections above our innate rejection, divisiveness and even hatred of each other, we can then experience our reality as perfect. By correcting human nature, we will feel how our relationships blossom and breathe afresh, and how every moment is renewed and recreated. Our planet will then become paradise, nothing less than heaven on earth. People at War. Zaha for All, Ahere Mot, 65. How good and how pleasant. These other friends, as they sit together inseparably. At first, they seem like people at war, wishing to kill each other. Then they revert back to a state of brotherly love. By studying Kabbalah, and striving to unite in the Ten, we begin to feel how separated we are from each other, how opposite we are. At that, when trying to connect in the Ten, we receive something for a while. But as soon as we reach some good state of connection, there is an immediate breaking, cooling, distance, and fog between us, to the point we do not want to look at each other, or talk to each other. And again, we need to work to connect together. After all, if we want to receive the Creator's help and without this help we will not advance, we must be together in one system. So, we need to work on ourselves again. The importance of the goal, the importance of attaining the Creator, the importance of achieving the opening of the soul determines our aspiration for each other. In the name of this, we begin to draw closer, and we again move forward, until the next breaking. So, we are constantly moving toward the goal, rise fall, break, gentle rise sharp fall, and so many times. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, December 29, 2019. Life and Death, Part 9. Do Kabbalists fear death? Question: what is the correct attitude to death? Answer: I think that the best attitude is to not think about death, but rather believe that we exist infinitely, eternally. We must make sure that we attain this eternity and infinity, at least partially, in this life, in our corporeal state. After all, during our life we exist in order to reveal bestowal and love as a means for attaining eternity, perfection, and the Creator, the upper force that controls all of it. Our advancement should consist of this. In thinking about animalistic life and death, check yourself. Do you really care about this? If you do, then you are not yet seriously aspiring for spiritual qualities. When you are engaged in spirituality, you absolutely do not care about anything that happens to your body, whether it is alive or not. You exist and want to exist in the quality of bestowal and love. Question: does a Kabbalist care about his protein body? Through it, one contacts other people who are not yet in spirituality. If he did not have this body, he would not be able to communicate with his students. Answer: yes, he takes care of the body, but in a minimal sense, which is called the necessary and sufficient condition. Question: does a Kabbalist think about what will happen to his students and to his family after his death? Answer: family is a usual corporeal concern. Students, however, are a completely different thing. He has to prepare them so that they will remain with a good reserve of knowledge and methodology. It is necessary to organize a lab-like environment so they can test themselves and advance. Question: does it mean that a Kabbalist has a fear of death, but not in an egoistic sense? Answer: it is not the fear of death, but a desire to leave behind a world that is maximally directed at the goal of creation, and in no other way. What else can you leave? There is nothing else. We are approaching the state where a person begins to understand that the only way to leave something behind is in the form of good deeds. These good deeds are recorded on his or her account and are one's major gain in life. Question: as far as I understand, the good deeds are to bring other people to the revelation of the Creator. Are there any other good deeds you can do with respect to another person? Answer: there is nothing else, only to bring others closer to the Creator. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, January 14, 2019. Does Kabbalah support the idea of reincarnation? Quora. Michael Leitman, on Quora: does Kabbalah support the idea of reincarnation? A person is born with a particular spiritual potential and can choose whether to realize it in our world or not. When the body of a person dies, this spiritual potential passes to another body that is born, and that is how it continues until it is fully realized. This is what Kabbalah considered as reincarnation. That is, it is relevant only in relation to our spiritual potential. Therefore, according to a person's interests, it is possible to understand the level of his or her spiritual potential if one still finds satisfaction in corporeal desires for food, sex, family, money, honor, control and knowledge, or if one finds less and less satisfaction in those desires and finds oneself contemplating the meaning and purpose to life more and more. If it's the latter, then it's a sign of a person's spiritual desire awakening, which Kabbalah calls the point in the heart. The wisdom of Kabbalah is a method for developing this desire until we can perceive the eternal reality of the soul through it. When we reach the full realization of this spiritual potential, we no longer need to reincarnate in our world.
Do you believe in reincarnation? I don't believe in reincarnation. I study reincarnation. I see it and I watch it, and I'm inviting you to do that too. You don't have to believe. Kabbalah is not for believing. The first rule in Kabbalah, which first of all is a science, says the judge has only what his eyes can see. Meaning everything comes through experimentation, through study, and observing for yourself and existing in it. Yes, the reference is to your inner eyes, you're right. But there's no place for faith here. There's no such term as faith. What is faith? Someone tells me something and do I take it as fact?